You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.
Our second reader is one of those younger, very talented, very prolific, very public, very appealing, and very successful writers that legacy writers like myself are envious of. We've also become, we're not constant companions, but I think we've become friends over the years. And without further ado, I will just introduce a reader who has read here before, and we're glad to have here again, from Portland, the winner of the John W. Campbell New Writer Award, which he's no longer, hasn't been for a while, eligible for, Jay Lake.
Thank you. I want to thank you guys for throwing that big parade for me outside. That was really awesome. And
the dragons especially.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was born in Taiwan. It's been all in my childhood there. So, you know, it really was about me. And as far as hanging around with legacy writers, I commented before this event that I feel hopelessly outclassed at this table. I'm going to read a little bit from Sunspin, which is the rather large space opera series that I decided I wanted to write because I'm kind of an idiot. It involves like 600,000 words of first draft and a whole bunch of other things. And I was trying to decide whether to read the first section, which is a space battle, or the second section, which is a conversation. And one of my first readers convinced me you'd rather hear the conversation than the space battle. So we'll see what we get out of this. The little bit of information you need to know that you would know if you had read the first section is that a character named Cannon, who is the oldest woman in the universe, or the oldest human in the galaxy, and has survived a literally apocalyptic event to sort of watch civilization come back, has disappeared carrying an important secret that no one's really quite sure about yet. The Lesser Presence Chamber was large enough to contain a decently sized starship. A flattened ovoid almost a kilometer long and half that in diameter, the central axis was dominated by a zero-gravity water sculpture that circulated with varying degrees of fury, cycling to match the mood and metabolism of the Imperator. The outer walls were a nearly abstract pattern of spun diamond windows, admitting a view of the orbital space about Vertanen B, alternating with fractally textured biogenic surfaces. Each of the latter mimicked in color and form the ecosystem of a selected planet in the Imperium Humanum, a map of the idea of the Imperium Humanum, in effect, wrapping around every visitor like a fist of power. Exits and entrances, viewing galleries, guard posts, waiting areas, holding pens, kitchens, baths, half a thousand useful and needful things were concealed amid the towering stems and colored clouds of the solid panels. Hard vacuum lurked beyond the spun diamond, scored and textured by the booms and arms and curving arches of the palace orbital's exterior structure. The Imperator, Pete Moreland Clovis Srinagar Byers Clovis Subshang Sumbrockman, often but somewhat inaccurately referred to as the Imperator Moreland II, paced the artfully chaotic turf of a small floating island. Profoundly fit and with a sort of build that only 9 centuries of careful breeding and genetic sculpting could produce, the Imperator was not an overly tall man. His eyes were dense, intense brown, his hair likewise brown, though somewhat more pale, with a few deliberate streaks of that gray which signals seniority and authority to the human mind. Layers of achromatic spider silk clad him in a multifaceted fall of robes, so that the Imperator was difficult to keep in the eye from any distance, at least for those not fitted with the correct oculi. The island itself measured about 10 meters long, perhaps 7 meters wide, irregular in form, and was covered with a springy bright green grass in which winked tiny flowers of a dozen species and far more colors. The underside was an inverted pyramid of rock, soil, and questing roots, all of it disguising the subtle and necessary machinery that kept the island aloft and equipped with gravity. Moreland II was trailed by 2 people. One, Mist, interlocutrix of the Navis Parliament, barely 20 years of age, and blessed with an uncanny ebony-skinned, white-haired beauty that emphasized the degree to which she was an artificial creation, bore a library in her arms. She wore a simple coverall of pale blue intended to evoke the working uniform of a starship's crew, though it had been tailored by some of the finest seamsters in the Imperium Humanum. The other, Freddy Tavares, special assistant to the Associate Minister of Polity Affairs, a squat, swarthy mainline human with a raw-boned face who would have looked at home on a back-alley dirt side and dressed hardly better in a modest gray business suit, bore only a worried expression. Tavares was also the only one of the three who could have walked down an ordinary city street alone and unbothered. This was an irony of power he had long marked with commendable silence. "Your ship minds are surely taking the example of the Befores as a salutary caution." The Befores are the very small group of quasi-immortals that the missing canon belongs to. The Imperator once more picked up the threads of a long-running discussion. His voice had held a dangerous edge. Mist shrugged, gently rocking the library, which whimpered an unheard complaint through desiccated lips. "They do not perceive the experience of the Befores as a relevant example. The consciousness template of a ship mind has very little in common with the analogous structures of the human mind," Tavares added, "or what we know of the Before mind, sire." He was the Imperatorial government's leading expert on that particular set of issues, at least with respect to the quasi-immortal and frighteningly powerful Befores. They were like a virus insisted in the body politic of the Imperium Humanum, quiescent but with a fatal power if stirred to activity. At that thought, he glanced sideways at the library Raissa, cradled by mist. Where the interlocutrix was barely of adult age and years subjective, the library held the unfortunate distinction of being the mortal remains of one of the oldest Befores, as well as being the first of them to be libraried at her death. Her bald, wizened head was mated to the neck stump with a small jeweled casket. Lacquered azure was studded with rubies, emeralds, and other gems. Subtle machineries within that base served to maintain the ancient brain with its subdural matrices of memory and processing power. More prosaically, it also provided a data interface. The cracked lips were moving again, though the voice box embedded in the casket would have worked well enough. 15 centuries of being human, or at least human-derived, had given the Librarius habits that were hard to break. Besides which, she was accounted to be among the least stable of the 38 libraries known to exist in the Imperium Humanum. That was something of a distinction, given their notoriously strange behavior. Tavares broke off his distracted attempt to read the library's lips and focused more closely on the Imperator's remarks. Failing to do so could be a traumatic experience. Moreland II very much believed in teaching by example. Some of his examples in the past have been fatally permanent. "But we do not understand," the Imperator was saying, one hand waving wide. "A failure to comprehend this could be fatal. Mistake fatal, ultimately. Freddy?" When someone in high authority, and there was no authority higher than the Imperator, invoked the mistake as a basis of a comparison, it wasn't just media-driven hyperbole. The death of half a trillion human beings and 1,000 planets at the hands of still unknown aliens had left a scar on the collective psyche of Homo sapiens that 11.5 centuries of recovery and reconstruction had barely begun to erase. "Sire," Tavares replied automatically, stalling for a moment to think. As Imperators went, Moreland II was a fairly reasonable man. A fairly reasonable man who expected to be attended to closely and held the power of life and death over virtually everyone around him. Mist was a notable and rare exception to that dominance. Not a citizen, in a sense the only slave in the Imperium Humanum, she was property of and protected by the Navis Parliament. Lucky woman. He could feel the sweat breaking on his forehead. "Sire," Tavares searched for something to say in response to the Imperator's question. "Even now, there is so little we understand about the Howard Initiative during the Palti era. Too much data was irretrievably obliterated by the mistake, or hidden since, depending how nefarious one was willing to believe the Befores were. We have no baseline from which to extrapolate. The Before Michaela Cannon is our best example." "She is lost to us," the Imperator replied starkly. His tone of voice clearly implied that Cannon might soon not be the only one lost. "Along with the starship, third rectification, 58 pairs," Mist reminded him sharply, saving Tavares from his untenable position in the conversation. "A valuable ship mine with as much personhood as any before. And over 100 of our subjects," the Imperator snapped. Tavares rallied. These difficult conversations were his job, after all. "They've only been missing 6 years objective, Your Highness," he pointed out. "If something happened that required the starship to return at relativistic speeds, they could be some years yet. The Before Michaela Cannon has survived everything that's happened to her for over 2,000 years. Underestimating a Before was rather like underestimating a nuclear weapon. It was a mistake most people only ever got to make once." "While managing to recover from temporal psychosis," the Imperator turned and paced back again. "She's the only Before who has ever come back from that decline. That is a rare feat indeed. One that our researchers have never been able to fully explain." He glanced back at the library Raissa, still in Mist's arms. "What have you to say, Oracle?" Bluish bubbles of lysergic acid formed at the corners of leathered lips. Eyes like dried olives twitched, another ancient habit of life. "Loss," the library whined. "Time breathes decay like a fat man farts. We live too long, we die too slow." The Emperor stared for a long moment, his brown eyes narrow slits. "Sire," Tavaris began, "when you phrase..." Moreland II raised a hand to forestall the comment. "I am perfectly well aware of the uses and limitations of a library, Minister. Inside the stars, the secrets lie. They collect shadows within the blinding of the light." "Silence," the Imperator ordered. The library Raisa subsided, twitching and muttering and dripping azure goo from the gash of its mouth. Mist, still carrying the head on its bejeweled casket, did not seem to notice. "You could simply ask the ship minds." Tavaris tried to track her thinking without success. The Imperator shook his head, one arm spreading with open-fingered gesture. "Prima facie, they do not tell us the truth." Mist's voice was chill. "They do not lie." "I do not say that your masters lie. I said they do not tell the truth. Those are not equivalent statements." "Forgive me, Moreland." She laughed unexpectedly, voice trilling like springtime birds. "Sometimes I misunderstand your precision. I rule 600 worlds, yet I cannot cause one young woman to divine my intent." His frown was stormy as he gazed at Tavaris. Those brown eyes glittered dangerously. "What would you ask the ship minds, Freddy?" Tavaris knew a rhetorical killing field when he saw one. Time to gracefully duck the question. "I would ask their interlocutrix." She smiled at him, somewhere between sweet and edged. "They do not share our journey. Time is a different experience for Polyphemus and the rest." A pair of intense gazes prodded Tavaris to unwilling response. The Imperator's mood was setting his own nerves on edge. That is where the comparison of the before seems sensible to me, sire, Sarah. He took a deep breath, watching the Imperator's expression nervously. "They may have been human once, but they've long since embarked on their own journey through time. They were once children as well. Likewise, in an important sense, the ship minds are children of men." The Imperator glared at him. "Your reasoning fails. There have been no new before since the mistake. New ship minds are instantiated several times each decade objective." Moved to stubbornness, Tavaris spoke more forcefully than he truly thought wise in such rarefied and dangerous company. "Both befores and ship minds were brought into being by human ingenuity. In principle," he added silently, "they could be removed by human ingenuity. In practice, perhaps not so much." "Not precisely," murmured Misk. "No, not precisely. Inhuman and grotesquely powerful, both befores and the ship minds had long since transcended their progenitors. Unsealed, the first ship mind had been an emergent phenomenon manifesting amid some of the earliest post-mistake experiments with the paired drive. The befores were an artifact of the pre-mistake polity, with their roots extending backward through time to the dim ages prior to the advent of interstellar travel. But effectively so, regardless, and even the oldest of the ship minds are several centuries younger than the youngest of the befores. Each type of mind demonstrates to us something important about consciousness, direction, and time. In observing them, I have come to understand that sentience is not a selection criteria for immortality. Tell that to the before Michaela Cannon. The Imperator loosed a decidedly unconventional sort of amusement, or possibly disgust. At least his mood was growing more relaxed. In Mist's arms, the library became very agitated at this mention of Cannon. I take your point, the interlocutrix said more gently. But though both paths are divergent from yours, they are also divergent from one another. The fours are failing. I think that's all my time.
You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.